Hey there, Kodo listeners. This is Matt from the Kodo news team. And just jumping in here to say that unfortunately, due to some technical difficulties, we missed the first little bit of the COVID Community Health Forum. Not that much, but just jumping in to say that this starts just like a few minutes into the health forum, but we didn't miss that much and we really got most of it. So sorry about that. Unfortunately, technical difficulties happen, but luckily we have most of the forum recorded. So here you go.
And Johnson & Johnson, or the Janssen vaccine. And this is really where we know there's not going to be significant side effects, but as we reach more of the general population, there may be some very rare side effects that occur very infrequently. And so over the next 3 to 4 years, CDC and the FDA will continue to monitor the safety of the vaccines approved. Next slide. So once we have a safe and effective vaccine, the ACIP, the Independent Review Board, gives recommendations for the best way to distribute the vaccines to have the most positive effect against whatever disease it's fighting. For COVID, we know that about 80% of deaths and severe outcomes occur for people that are 70 years or older. We also know that there's different jobs and workplaces that have a higher risk exposure to the virus due to the nature of the work being in confined spaces with other people outside your household. So the state of Colorado developed their own vaccine distribution plan in which we are currently in phase 1B3, which wraps in everybody 60 and older, those working in grocery and agriculture, and people with two or more high-risk conditions. We are currently in this phase, but going through it quickly and anticipate moving into phase 1B4 by the end of March. So close to mid to late March is when we'll be hitting a much larger group of employment-based eligibility, as well as anybody who has any high-risk condition. Then later in the summer, late spring, we're anticipating having enough vaccine supplies as well as availability to do outreach to the general public. Next slide. So where can you learn more about how to sign up to get the vaccine, as well as where we are currently in the phasing? And that's really with our county COVID website. If you look on the vaccine tab, it tells you which phase we're in, who that includes, how many vaccines have been administered so far. And then you can see that little yellow arrow there. That's that pre-registration application form. If you fill out that form, we will contact you by email once you are eligible to receive the vaccine. And that email will allow you to schedule for a date and time that works best for you to receive the vaccine for COVID. Next slide. So how do you get to that county COVID website? We recommend using this shortened account if you don't know it already and have it saved, but the bit.ly/SMCvaccine. You can also call the 1-877-COVAX number. That's ran by the State Health Department. It's open 24/7 and has about an 11-second wait call, but they have people on standby to answer any questions you might have about the vaccine. It's a great resource, and I highly recommend you all taking advantage of it. Okay.
Thanks so much, Grace. I appreciate that. And folks, something I forgot to mention at the beginning is we'll have a Q&A right after this presentation. So hold your questions or don't hesitate to drop them into the chat as you see fit. We'll be running all the questions on a raised hand basis in order that they are received. So you can raise your hand by hitting the reactions button at the bottom of your screen, or you can drop a question into the chat at any time. But moving on to COVID-19 and your off season. So this is a map from the CDC travel advisory site. The dark red, that maroon color that you're seeing, is a very high risk assessment for COVID-19 threat. So looking at places that could be nice to travel right now are actually very far away from home. So just be aware of this CDC advisory. This is available and updated daily on the CDC website as you see fit. The advisement from the CDC and from San Miguel County Public Health at this time is to not travel far. We encourage folks to consider staying close to home this off season and throughout spring break. The end of the pandemic, as Grace mentioned, is in sight, especially with vaccinations happening on a weekly basis at this time. Do not risk your health or the health of those that you love by traveling, and consider things that could be a little less risky, if you will. One of the biggest points we would like to make is that you never know who you could infect. Considering the livelihood of those you love and those you do not know at this time is of utmost importance. If you must travel, if there's an extenuating circumstance that requires you to travel, we encourage you, and the CDC encourages you, to make a plan. Commit to traveling within your own household or with your pod. So we're returning to this advisement of pods as they become more safe. Pods must make an agreement with each other that they will stay safe and attentive to each other's safety throughout the duration of the pandemic. So that includes limiting contact with others over the course of the remainder of the pandemic at this time. So preparing for travel in that way, quarantining yourself and limiting your contact budget, as we've referred to, over the course of the last many months. So limiting the number of people you come into contact with in advance of your travel. Research regulations wherever you might be going. This can be found frequently on the CDC website, on state public health websites, and then on local public health sites as well. If you need any assistance finding information about a place that you're going and the regulations occurring in that place, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. And then considering alternative types of travel and vacations, such as road trips or camping and RV travel. So this off season, similarly to last off season in the fall and in the spring, we're encouraging people to stay within the county and find ways to experience the outdoors and all the amazing things that our area has to offer at that time. Also, another important point is to consider the resources of a place that you're visiting. So considering a place like Telluride or Norwood, knowing that there are no hospitals in those locations, resources are very limited when it comes to dealing with a COVID case in those locations. Moab was another location nearby that was very highly affected in the early spring and early months of the pandemic, as people ventured there from other locations, also with limited resources. So consider where you're going as well.
Yeah, and Lindsay, just to chime in on that too, I feel like with a lot of this COVID travel, if you travel locally, how can you be that self-sufficient piece? And really with that camping and RV style, that helps lend to support that, right? You're a little bubble in and of yourself, but you still get to get out of this Box Canyon, out of this county, and really explore in a safe way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So shop in your county before you go somewhere new. Great point, Grace. Thank you. So currently, national travel restrictions have been updated. So negative test results or documentation of recovery from COVID-19 are required now before boarding a flight back to the United States. So this includes U.S. residents Anybody boarding a flight to the U.S. is required to provide one of these two documentations. Additionally, masks are now required on all forms of public transportation. This includes buses, airplanes, and the like, while traveling into, within, or out of the United States. So this is all now federal restrictions and federal regulations that are punishable by potentially getting kicked off your flight, by fines, or various other implications as well. So again, this is some CDC recommendations for the best ways to protect yourselves while traveling. If you're traveling by car, make sure you're taking short trips. No stops are, of course, safer than longer road trips with one or more stops. And then traveling with your household members is, of course, going to be the safest way to travel rather than with people that don't live with you directly. And of course, when you do go out, the CDC advises to follow the five commitments that we've been recommending for the majority of this last year. Camping, additionally, staying home is, of course, the best way that you can protect yourself and those you love. If you do travel, consider camping with household members. That's something that, you know, our county is very, very seasoned at and very good at this time. Sharing facilities with others is less safe than camping with regard to, you know, COVID transmission at this time. Testing. So thinking ahead with testing is one of the greatest things we can encourage at this time. The advisement is that folks test no more than 3 days before your travel date in order to ensure accuracy of the test in time for your travel date. Additionally, that recommendation to quarantine and limit your contact with others in advance of your travel, the advisement there is 14 days before your travel and ensuring that you're monitoring symptoms or potential symptoms very closely. If you have even one symptom, do not travel. So again, testing no more than 3 days before your date. And then maintain proof of your negative test by printing it or keeping a screenshot of it on your phone. This sometimes can arise while traveling. It's something that you could be asked of, whether boarding a plane or entering a county where there is a negative test requirement upon arrival. And then upon return, the advisement is to test no less than 5 days after your last potential exposure. And this is a CDC recommendation to ensure that after your last potential exposure, which could be the day of your flight, that would be the most efficient amount of time to pass to ensure that there's an accurate test at that time. So 5 days after your last potential exposure. So this is just, again, a reminder from the CDC. If you test negative, maintain a copy of your test results while you're traveling, and then take precautions to protect yourself while traveling. Those five commitments that we've been reminding of over the last many months will be very helpful while you travel. If you do test positive or develop symptoms of COVID-19, do not travel. Even with one symptom of COVID, we've seen a lot of folks in our very healthy, active San Miguel County population having very mild cases of COVID across the board. So it's very important at this time that even with one symptom, you do not travel. Immediately isolate yourself and get tested, and then follow public health recommendations when you get in touch or when contact tracing gets in touch with you. And then testing after travel, the CDC guideline says 3 to 5 days. Our advisement and the CDC's advisement is 5 days from the last potential exposure. So that would be 5 days after your flight. And then be sure to isolate upon your return. If you test positive or develop symptoms again, don't travel. Isolate yourself immediately. If you don't get tested after you return, the advisement is to stay home for 10 days and self-quarantine. If you can't get a test within those 10 days or you choose not to test, 10 days from your last potential exposure while watching for symptoms is going to be critically important at that time. And then continue to take precautions to protect other people, including following those five commitments. So the San Miguel County Public Health's advisement for returning from travel is to get tested again within 5 days after your trip. Stay home and self-quarantine for a full 7 days after travel if you get tested, even if your test is negative. So you're looking at a 7-day self-quarantine period from the day you return from travel. And that's a chance to really analyze your symptoms to avoid potentially exposing other people. And, you know, with any case we've seen in COVID, it's common that you could be shedding the virus before symptom onset. So this is why this self-quarantine is so critical, because we want to ensure that you're not shedding and infecting somebody else before your symptoms come on. If you don't get tested, stay home and self-quarantine for 10 days after travel. So this is a graph that we showed last month at the spread forum. So discussing how COVID is spreading amongst our residents in San Miguel County. So looking at the cases by exposure, 7% over the last year was from travel. Currently, household, social, and community spread are the most concerning. That said, travel had a severe uptick in November and December surrounding the holidays, likely because people were going to visit their families. And we see a lot of time not spent at home, which we'll get into in the spring off season. So this graph, pardon me if it's a little blurry on your end, folks. I'm hoping. Okay, good. Looks good. So this graph is representing the visitorship to San Miguel County. And Grace, feel free to jump in here if you have specific points you'd like to make. But looking at the places people are coming from, we're seeing a lot of folks coming from drive markets, of course. So folks coming from other places in Colorado, looking at Wyoming, Utah, and Texas are going to be those blue zones. That Texas is that large blue on the top of the graph at this point. So looking at the level of travel from December 2019 through this month, there was a low level of travel at the beginning of the pandemic with lockdowns, and then a very high increase in travel beginning in June. You start seeing that increase, and then a decrease in travel to the area. So the big motivation here is that the population decreases over the course of our off season, which then limits our potential risk as residents of San Miguel County to be exposed from non-residents. So staying home is actually very, very safe during our off-season months leading up to our summer season. And with vaccines on the horizon for the general public, this is a really good time to stay home, avoid potential exposure or infection, which could then limit your ability to get a vaccine, as we aren't vaccinating people that have had COVID-19 within the last 90 days.
Yeah, and I would just say the other touch point for this is none of this really is a surprise, right? We know whether we're looking at the data points or just out in our community that we have a very unique setup with folks coming in and out and having our own residents being very mobile as well. So the tricky part is with COVID, we know that travel increases potential exposure. So really just being cognizant of these ebbs and flows as we move about our daily life. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Grace. So this next graph diagram reveals the level of community transmission around the United States by county. So this is a current analysis of community transmission and how COVID is spreading in various areas around the U.S. So you can see several hot spots in states where mask mandates have been lifted. You can also see several hot spots throughout the state of Colorado. So again, travel is not advised by the CDC nor San Miguel County Public Health at this time. All right. And then this is the COVID-19 cases by exposure category from last March to this past February. So looking at the types of exposure, and of course, you can see a big concentration in the last several months as we started seeing spikes in November, December, and January, and a nice decrease happening in February, but still a very uncomfortably high case count for last month. So looking at yellow, that's going to be travel exposure over the course of the last year. As you can see, it has changed over the course of the year, but we'll get into a deep dive next year. So this is an analysis of the exposure category as a percentage of the total caseload for that month. So last March, when looking at the cases, 60% of the cases were from travel-related exposures at that time. And then you see travel come into play in June and July, and then heavily around the holidays in November and December as off-season kind of led. And now we're looking at January and February with also some travel exposure there. Community exposure, again, as a quick reminder, is when there's not really a known transmission. So you can't pinpoint that transmission exactly. So it could be from an activity outside of your home, an exposure in the office, but there's no direct connection to a known positive at that time. So community exposure is also something to pay attention to when considering the travel exposure piece. So then this is that deep dive into our travel exposure per month over the course of the last year. So we saw, again, this large spike around the holidays in November and December with 15 and 14 positives related to travel, respectively. And then another big spike in February with 10 positives related to travel. So how can you help contain the spread? So this is just kind of an overarching slide to discuss what we can do to prevent further spread. Getting vaccinated when it's your turn, as Grace touched on earlier, is our avenue out of this pandemic at this time. So the moment you get that email, the moment you get that phone call, the moment you can schedule that appointment, please by all means do. And we'll open up to questions here in just a moment so we can discuss vaccines a bit more deeply. Picking one contained pod and sticking to it. So again, when it comes to off-season and spring break travel, consider sticking within your household. If that feels difficult, commit to a pod. If you do stray or deviate from your pod, consider isolating yourself and RSVPing no to the next event until you know that you are safe and that you have potentially a negative test. Being transparent with your pod is the most effective way to really move forward and take care of each other in that way. Again, socializing with people only in your household is a really incredible way to stay exceptionally safe at this time. The updated county health order allows public and private gatherings actually among no more than 10 people from no more than two households. Pardon me, we hadn't updated that line. And then staying home when sick, especially from work and school. And this comes back to that single symptom experience. So if you're having even one symptom, stay home from work, stay home from school, keep your kids home, and avoid potential exposure for other folks. Get tested quickly. We have lots of free testing opportunities through public health. Those are available online. And then keep your household home too, if you can. We understand that this is a really difficult ask frequently, but if you have the capability to stay home, then use extreme, it's an extreme level of caution to do so, but be sure that you're being as safe as possible in that way. And then continuing to follow the five commitments of containment, the CDC released new guidelines today for folks that have been vaccinated. San Miguel County Public Health and the CDC are recommending that until much more is known, that folks follow the five commitments of containment, including wearing face coverings, maintaining 6 feet, washing your hands frequently, and getting tested when you have any symptoms at any time, and then limiting group size as well. So CDC recommendations, if you must travel, these are things to consider. Travel increases your chances of getting and spreading COVID-19. The CDC says do not travel at this time. And that is domestically and internationally. They're advising that people do not travel. Delay travel and stay home to protect yourself and others. Do not travel if you were exposed to COVID-19, if you are sick, or you have tested positive for COVID-19. And then finally, check your state, territorial, or local health department for information about local quarantine requirements. There are locations that are requiring a 14-day quarantine upon arrival, which would be the duration of your spring break. So please be sure to check those requirements in advance of traveling, should you have to travel at this time. And then just as a quick reminder, we are in level yellow. The regulations are all posted on the San Miguel County COVID-19 page on the site, and you'll be able to kind of poke around there. They're also on the CDPHE website for the dial framework, should you need more assistance there. One quick update in that vein, the state modified dial 2.0. And as of the 7th, and level yellow now has a last call shifted to 1 a.m. Level blue last call is shifted to 2 a.m. These are the two big points from the new modifications. Currently, level yellow is now in effect. So last call for food and beverage in restaurant establishments and bars functioning as restaurants is 1 a.m. There are several other modifications that don't pertain directly to any of our regulations in San Miguel County at this time. If you'd like to read more about those, the new public health order is published on the CDPHE website. So now we will get to questions. So again, folks, I'm going to stop sharing my screen so I can see all of you. So if you would like to raise your hand, you can hit the reactions button at the bottom of your screen and hit the raise hand button there. Otherwise, you can drop a question into the chat. And of course, we're taking questions surrounding vaccines, level yellow, any off-season travel questions. Really, the world's your oyster as long as it is COVID related at this time. And Dr. Grundy, I did see you joined. If there's anything you would like to add, please don't hesitate to do so. I will make you a co-host right now.
Sorry, I was late.
No worries.
I'm here now.
That's all that matters.
It is very snowy down in Ilium.
And Dr. Grundy, I feel like having a kid, right, in school, being a parent, and also being in this Box Canyon for over a year now, nose to the grindstone, I'd love to hear some good examples of safer traveling during spring break or during off season.
Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, my impression is there are a lot of people who this spring break compared to last spring break are ready to kind of fly the coop and get out of the valley, get out of the region, and go see grandparents and family members. I was chatting with three different people today who haven't seen family in over a year and a half. And so those are pretty emotional things. And a lot of parents are work for the ski area or the industry surrounding it. So there's no work over those 2 weeks that the kids are out of school, because most businesses kind of tend to shut down for that time period. So I think safe travel still remains kind of staying locally, doing a car trip, and making sure when we go to other places that if we're going to restaurants or whatnot, that we're wearing a mask, distancing, or trying to get takeout, camping, et cetera, that we're all pretty good at. I think if we're ready to kind of journey throughout the country to go see family members, I think it's super important to check in with those family members, especially if we're going to see somebody who's vulnerable. So I am traveling April 1st to Florida, which is probably scary to most people, but I'm going to see my mother who's 78. She's fully vaccinated. Her partner's fully vaccinated. My brother is fully vaccinated and his wife. We do have a sixth grader, so he will be wearing a mask. We're all going to be wearing a mask, but we will, as we get to our little pod, we'll kind of stay nice and tight. I don't plan on going to a mall in Florida or a movie theater. I definitely don't plan on going to a restaurant inside. If I do go outside, I'm going to assess the place to make sure that tables are kind of 6 feet apart or so, inside or outside. So again, I think you can do this well. I think it's just going to be hand washing. We are going to get on a plane. We're all going to wear an N95 mask on the plane. We're going to wipe it down. We're going to have hand sanitizer. And I'm totally prepared. If one of us starts to get sick before we leave, we're prepared to cancel the trip or postpone it. So I think those are the things in the back of my mind, like how do you do it safely? International travel, I think, is fine. I just really want to plant the seed in people's minds of three things. If you're going to a country that does not have a super strong healthcare system, we need to be careful that we don't bring this virus to a small remote community that can't handle it. And we dump off COVID-19 to a community that hasn't had it, and it goes through that community. And so just please, I sent an email out to the TelMed site. Just please go to the resources through the states. It's through the U.S. government. And Lindsay, maybe you could post that. It's the, I'm totally spacing the name of it right now. But you should be checking for each country and travel restriction and kind of know before you go. Number two is the variants are circulating throughout the world, and we really, really don't want, especially the South African variant coming to the U.S. in a large way, because that it does look like the vaccine is not as effective against that strain in particular. So we just want to be careful about international travel and returning back to the U.S. So again, trying to practice those five commitments wherever we go. So if I will not be traveling to Florida to go to like a 30-person family reunion. We're going to kind of keep it small, keep it tight, keep it outdoors. And I'm going to suss out if people are fully vaccinated or not, like who can we be around, but my child will not be. So I'm going to make sure I'm watching that situation too, so that he can come back to our community safely and get back into school.
I think you touched on a really good point there too. Just as a reminder, if folks do have questions, feel free to enter it into the chat or raise your hand. Otherwise, we can continue to banter on for far too long. With the CDC, they came out with new guidance on Monday about what does it look like if you've been fully vaccinated. So 2 weeks has passed since the full series, whether that's one shot with the Janssen vaccine or two with the Moderna and Pfizer. What kind of behavior you should model. And I think you touched on it really well, Dr. Grundy, of if everybody in your party is fully vaccinated, there's a little bit more leniency for small gatherings. But if there's people that are not vaccinated, and the majority of the people will be our children moving forward, how do we protect them and keep it moving, but be mindful of these limitations and the true risks that are associated with it? So it's starting to get grayer, but in an exciting way.
Thank you. And I also think, Dr. Grundy, you made a good point about what you'll be doing in Florida, and it's not necessarily visiting our beloved theme parks or, you know, heading to crowded beaches, but rather spending time in a pod in a controlled environment together. So that's another.
I'm not ready to go to Disney World.
I wish I was. I would love to go back to another world. But yes, I think we're still a few months out from all of that. Thank you. Grace, any questions that you've received? Let's see. Interesting. Okay. Why, Josh, thank you for your question. Why is it that none of you are recommending boosting your immune system and taking a holistic approach to this virus instead of the big pharma vaccine approach? From my research, none of these vaccines are fully approved by the FDA, only through an EUA.
And I'll tag team with Dr. Grundy to talk about what the EUA means, but for an emergency like a global pandemic, emergency use authorizations is a really high level way that both testing vaccines and other treatments are approved and are safe and have the research to back it. But most FDA approved items do take decades of research, right? And so everything that's been going on in COVID world has been under that emergency use authorization, including all of the tests that we've been providing. That doesn't make it unsafe. It just is a testament to the amount of work that people put in together to solve these very large scale issues. I would say too, there's a lot to be said about boosting your immune system in holistic ways, getting outdoors and exercising, eating healthy, communing with your friends in a safe and distanced way. It's all these tools that you need to play and put into place in order to really keep yourself healthy and be able to fight off any kind of virus or other illness.
And to follow up on that, so again, I think everybody needs to take a personal, this is a very personal decision where you have to balance out the risk of what COVID-19 could do to you versus the possible risk of what a new vaccine and long-term side effects. And that's a tricky one. But I think it's very important. So like an 80-year-old, their risk of dying from COVID-19 is astronomically greater than mine at age 50. So each person needs to kind of risk stratify this. We are also, though, however, trying to protect everybody. And so you're trying to reach herd immunity, whether it be through the natural virus or a vaccine, but it's all gonna kind of come into play together. I will be kind of a little bit critical about the word boosting your immune system. So the problem that we're seeing with COVID-19 is actually an overstimulated immune system that starts around day 7. So a lot of people get it, they do fine. But who's been actually getting hospitalized are these kind of so some of the hospitalizations are occurring in kind of a 50, 40-year-old population who's super healthy, no medical problems, but they have an actual too high of an immune system response that causes that cytokine storm. So I'd like to say, instead of saying boosting, I'd be recommending a balancing of immune system. So a lot of the whole, a lot of the integrative medicine practitioners and the research that's going on is actually not to be taking things that boost your immune system response, but things that balance it. And so again, some of the traditional Chinese medicine herbs actually have been studied for pretty well on coronaviruses. So, you know, I personally work with Josh Geeter and chat with him about stuff like that. So it's more kind of, how do we keep the immune system in balance and check? So definitely look in, we don't want to give anything that revs our immune system up too much because we're worried about that cytokine storm. But each individual needs to take their own risk and their decision. It's a very personal decision regarding that. But we also need to be thinking about the people around us. So if they are not getting vaccinated, can we bring that, like, how do we create that herd immunity safely?
Thank you, Dr. Grundy. Josh, if you have any follow-up questions, please don't hesitate to drop those in the chat. And again, if anyone else has questions, we will absolutely take them. You can raise your hand by hitting the reactions button at the bottom, or by dropping questions into the chat. Grace, let's discuss a bit about the vaccine phasing. How quickly are we moving? Who's up next? I know March 21st is kind of the date that is hopefully slotted for our phase 1B4 to begin. What else can we provide to people that have attended this evening?
So lots of good questions there, Lindsay. So the first part was who's up now, who's up next? And it's really anybody 60 and above has two or more high-risk conditions or is wrapped into some of the previous employment eligibility, so education staff, healthcare workers, people who work in grocery or agriculture, and a couple other that I'm missing. But as we move through this, I think that it's a lot of hurry up and wait. And so there is a patience game to it, with the link, that bit.ly/SMC vaccine link we showed earlier, that really does plug you into the best place to get updates for our county and where we're sitting. At the end of this month, as you mentioned, March 21st is when we're anticipating moving to the next phase. That would wrap in our food workers, utilities, and essential critical workforce like power, waste, water, and then anybody 50 years and above, or anybody who has health conditions. And so it's this constant balance of trying to weigh people who might have severe outcomes versus people who might be exposed more frequently to the virus through their work or other conditions. But if you register on that webpage, thanks Lindsay for putting it in the chat, that really is that spot where we will be able to identify your interest in the vaccine and then reach out to you once you're eligible. The other key piece too is, what if our clinics for San Miguel County don't work with your schedule, or you don't feel comfortable receiving the vaccine from us? That's okay. There's a few different options you can access through, and the most the simplest one that you can reach is through the pharmacy program. So City Markets, Walmart, and a couple other like Walgreens and CVS's, they receive federal allocations of the vaccine to push out to different groups. So if you're willing to drive to Cortez or to Montrose, you're more than welcome to get the vaccine there. And it's been a great avenue for those who would prefer to get their vaccine either quicker or with a different group. The one big ask for us is, if you do have a two-dose vaccine, the Moderna or the Pfizer, that you plan to get your second dose at the same place.
Thank you, Grace. Mia, great question. So the question that came through from Mia McLaughlin, it says that, or asks, is there any reason why some people are getting sicker than others from vaccine one versus vaccine two? So I think to modify that a little bit, are just having a different type of reaction to vaccine one versus vaccine two.
Grace, you want me to take that?
It's all you. Thank you.
So the two-dose vaccine, which is either Pfizer or Moderna, and they are different, both studies showed for either one of the messenger RNA vaccines, there was some localized reactions after vaccine one, some fatigue, headache, achiness. And there was a larger percentage after the second dose of both vaccines, Moderna kind of having a little bit more. There is no current reason as to why some people get more of a reaction than others. We've known for a long time with vaccines that older adults tend to not get as symptomatic after a vaccine than younger adults. And that's definitely seen in both Pfizer and Moderna, that the younger you are, the more of a robust reaction you have afterwards. The majority of the symptoms that you're having is actually your immune system kind of being triggered. And so we don't have a reason as to why, like, so myself, after my second vaccine, I definitely felt crummy for a full day. My husband barely felt anything. So there isn't quite yet a pattern that they've been able to designate. I've also had the question, I've had people who've had COVID-19 now receive the vaccine. And again, it also seems just as random that it seems just as random as someone who hasn't had COVID-19. And then I've heard if you had a bad reaction, either dose, and with both vaccines, it means your immune system is very strong. You've had or you've had COVID. Is there any validity to that? I'd like to paraphrase that as if you didn't have a reaction, does that mean you don't have immunity? They haven't shown that, but I do think if you're having a reaction, that's just your immune system talking to you. And it's definitely preparing to be able to fight the COVID-19 vaccine off, illness off. And a reminder, like, that's how good both of these vaccines are, is, CDC starting to relax things pretty quickly as we have more and more people vaccinated, that they're feeling very comfortable that people who are fully vaccinated are not going to get hospitalized, severely ill, or necessarily pass it along in a huge way that they're a super spreader. So that's really, this is really good news.
Thank you, Dr. Gundy. Thank you, Mia. Folks, we have about 10 minutes left. So if there are any other questions, we would love to take them. Again, you can raise your hand through the reactions button at the bottom of your screen, or you can drop a question into the chat. Dr. Grundy and Grace, could we talk about the Janssen vaccine for a moment, please? One of the big questions I've been receiving is, you know, with regard to preference surrounding a single shot versus two. But in reality, the time to full protection or full vaccination consideration is about the same. Could we touch on that a little bit, please?
So the Johnson & Johnson or Janssen vaccine, which is just the Belgium word for Johnson, so it's all the same company. They have released this vaccine. It's been getting pushed out. We will actually be pushing it out next week, week after next. Is that right, Grace?
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. Get you on the spot. just as good. So also, the statement is like, should I get one over the other? I think whatever vaccine's available, and that you can get the recommended course of it in the time period that's recommended is the right vaccine for you. Over the last couple of weeks, I've had a few people be like, nope, Johnson & Johnson's what I want. I'm waiting for that one. And that's fine. I think this is all, a personal decision, and you kind of people being able to be like, hey, can I stay safe for this period of time while I wait on this vaccine? It's a one dose vaccine. Immunity is achieved about 2 weeks after that first vaccine. And just like the Moderna or the Pfizer is a two dose vaccine, 21 days apart. The Moderna is recommended a two dose vaccine, 28 days apart. Pfizer's about 1 week after that third dose, second dose, and then the Moderna's 2 weeks after the second dose. I might have the Pfizer one wrong. Maybe that's 2 weeks too. I thought it was 1 week. But so the Johnson & Johnson's a different type of vaccine. It is what's called a viral vector vaccine, and they've attached a message in a different virus that can infect human cells. And this has been used before actually the Ebola vaccine that came out last year or 2019. And so it has been utilized already. And so it's good technology. It seems to have pretty good efficacy. It's not as good as probably the messenger RNAs as kind of fully preventing you from getting the virus. But what it was very good at is stopping hospitalizations or severe disease and death rates. So it was almost out of the population that was studied, which was over 35,000 people, it had a good rate of not having people hospitalized or whoever received the vaccine were not hospitalized and they had no deaths. And that's what we're trying to achieve with this, is not necessarily sterilizing immunity, but making sure we can protect people from severe illness.
Thank you, Dr.
And again, Grace, we're not rolling that out this week. We're rolling that out maybe next week.
Yeah, we currently have the plan for a clinic on the 19th and the 20th to prioritize the Janssen vaccine for those that are eligible. We also anticipate receiving more doses of both the Moderna and the Johnson & Johnson or Janssen after that date as well.
Thank you both. That was a great overview. So again, I think the big point we want to make clear is that whatever vaccine is available is the right vaccine for you. But again, I really enjoy Dr. Grundy's point about it being a personal decision. So do ask questions, do send us notes, and do engage as you see fit. With only 5 minutes left and no other questions coming in, I'd like to kind of pitch our own avenues to asking questions going forward. You can email us at publichealth@sanmiguelcountyco.gov. That's going to be the fastest way to get kind of a more private response. Alternatively, you can slide into our DMs on social media. I'll be replying to those directly as they come in. And if you have any other questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to your primary care provider who can help advise you on your vaccine journey. But thank you all so much for joining. We will post a recording of this session on the COVID website. And if you have any questions, please don't ever hesitate to reach out. Thank you all so much for being here and have a wonderful rest of your evening.